Welcome to this AAT podcast on the preparation and submission of P11Ds for the 2008-09 tax year. This first podcast will explain why forms P11D and forms P90 are required, what are the consequences of you or your clients getting these returns wrong, or indeed of not doing them at all. And then I'll try to guide you on preparing for the task ahead. A second P11D podcast will deal with the calculating and reporting of the benefits and the expense payments. So why do we have to complete and submit P11Ds and P90s? Well, of course, PAYSU and regulations tell us we have to. But the point is that income tax is chargeable on emoluments, and emoluments has a very wide meaning. In addition to salaries and wages that are taxed under PAYSU and through the payroll, and that we should have already included in the annual P14 returns with the P35 summary, emoluments also include perquisites and profits whatsoever. In other words, it includes benefits in kind. And we mustn't forget that employees may receive some expense payments that are taxable, or where perhaps there's an element of profit that is taxable, and therefore these also have to be reported to HMRC. The annual statutory P11D and P90 returns are the reporting mechanism for these expense payments and benefits in kind. And together with the form P11DB, the statutory return of Class 1A NICs, they have to be filed or submitted by Monday the 6th of July 2009. Please remember that there's no extended filing deadline for electronic filing of P11Ds, and my advice, as always, is not to leave it to the last moment. So let's file early. The P11DB is a very important statutory return. It's used by HMRC to collect the 12.8% employer-only national insurance contribution liability that applies to most benefits in kind, and has done since 2000. The statutory payment date for the 2008-09 Class 1A NIC's payment on the total of the brown boxes on the P11D is Sunday, the 19th of July 2009. Which this year means that payment has to be with HMRC by Friday the 17th of July, although of course we have the extension to the deadline if payment is made electronically. HMRC requires the money in its bank account by Wednesday the 22nd of July 2009 for electronic payments, and HMRC has recently changed its bankers. So I'm recommending that you visit the HMRC website to look at the details of how to pay. It's www.hmrc.gov.uk/payinhmrc/class1anics.htm. Have a look there to check how and when to pay the Class 1A NICs. Hopefully this and the other podcast, plus the CBD Master Courses in Southampton on the 20th of May, London on the 6th of June and Birmingham on the 13th of June will help you ensure that you and your clients will be able to file the 2008-09 P11Ds accurately and on time. But I dare not mention the penalties for getting it wrong. The penalty for non-submission of forms P11D is an amount not exceeding £300 per P11D. Plus there's the possibility of an award of continuing penalties of up to £60 per day. That would only apply if the failure continued after the award of an initial penalty, which should never happen because we would have time to prepare the P11Ds or to agree with the tax office that they're not due. However, where HMRC establishes that any of the P11Ds submitted are wrong, there's a maximum penalty of up to £3,000 per incorrect P11D that could be charged. Now, I regularly point out to AAT members that these penalties are rarely charged, and this is because HMRC will persuade the employer, normally, to pay the tax. To pay the tax, they'll be invited to do this, but it'll be on a voluntary basis, but also it'll be on a grossed-up basis. And then there'll be the payment of the employer's liability for Class 1A National Insurance contributions. There's no legal obligation on an employer to pay the income tax liability of any director or employee, not in respect of benefits in kind. It's different to where there's a failure to operate pay-as-you-earn. But where an employer agrees to meet the liability on benefits in kind, It will be grossed up and penalties will not be charged on the income tax element of the settlement. The grossing up is the penalty. Employers are not liable to interest on the income tax liability of the director or employee, but interest will be charged, and normally a penalty also on the underpayment of Class 1A national insurance contributions. And where there's grossing up, we'll have 12.8% liability on the benefit in kind, and we'll also have an NIC liability on the tax paid. The Class 1A NIC penalty for failure to submit Form P11DB is an initial fixed penalty of £100 per month, or part of a month, and it's for every 50 employees or part batch of 50 employees. What this means is a penalty of £100 per month if there's 1 to 50 employees, and if there were 51 to 60 employees, it would be £200, and so on. If the failure continued beyond 12 months, an additional penalty of up to a maximum of the Class 1A national insurance contributions underpaid on the 19th of July 2009 would be charged. But that penalty is subject to abatement. You have been warned. Getting started. Okay, now where do we begin? And what help is out there for you and me? Really, we should begin by gathering all the information provided by HMRC. Free information, start off with their website. It has sections on how to complete Form P11D, how to complete Form P9D, and how to complete Form P11DB, as well as a section which is an A to Z of expenses and benefits reporting. And then, of course, HMRC provides us with its award-winning CD-ROM. The CD-ROM can actually be used for completing P11Ds. The employer order line allows us to order just about everything we need, starting with the four-page 2008-09 P11D guide. But I also recommend the booklet 480, Expenses and Benefits, a Tax Guide. And many of you will know my favourite is the CWG5, the Class 1A NIC Guide for Employers. This will tell us whether it's Class 1 or Class 1A, and will also tell us what section of the P11D to enter the details on. When we are ready to start completing the forms, there are also six P11D working sheets available to help us with the calculations. Calculating the cash equivalent of living accommodation, car and fuel benefits, company vans, interest-free loans, relocation expenses and benefits, and finally, mileage allowance and passenger payments. However, we haven't reached that stage yet, so let's think about the information that we will need to complete and submit the P11D and P9D returns. At the time of me doing this podcast, we've not yet reached the 19th of May statutory deadline for submitting the annual PAY returns, the P14s and the P35. Although, in all fairness, many of you may have already filed your returns. My concern, as always, is the potential for overlooking a Class 1 national insurance contribution liability, which we might have missed by the time we get to doing the P11Ds. We and our employer clients should be asking whether any of the blue box entries on the 2008-09 P11Ds will give rise to a Class 1 NIC's liability. What about the payment of school fees on behalf of an employer or director? Many of you may remember the P35 employer annual return checklist on page 3, and the question 5 in particular, which specifically asks about school fees payments. Class 1 NICs were due and payable in the pay period in which the payment of the school fees was made, if that was a payment on behalf of the employee or director, as opposed to a contract between the employer and the school, which would then be a Class 1A issue, brown box on the P11D. If that payment was overlooked, and payment of Class 1 NICs was not made by the statutory payment deadline of the 19th of April 2009, an interest charge will have already started to run, before most employers have thought even about completing 2008-09 P11Ds. My advice to you, therefore, is if you think this might be an issue for your employer or any client, it would be sensible to give early consideration to any potential P11D entries where there may be that Class 1 NIC's liability from the blue box entries. as opposed to the brown box entries for which Class 1A NICs will be payable later. Next, I want to look at how to identify the expenses and benefits that do attract Class 1A NICs. The front page of the P11D highlights in brown writing below the Works Number Department box that employers pay Class 1A National Insurance contributions on most benefits. These are shown in boxes which are brown and have a Class 1A indicator. Section B, payments made on behalf of employees. Section C, vouchers or credit cards. Section E, mileage allowance and passenger payments. Section M, other items. And Section N, expense payments made to on behalf of the employees, are the blue boxes that do not attract Class 1A NIC. But will any of them attract a Class 1 liability that might have been missed? Section M of the P11D is the only dual choice section. We have both a brown box and a blue box, and we can make the choice at times where we choose to put the liability on the P11D. I've already mentioned the most obvious example is the payment of school fees by the employer, again highlighted on the P35. There are other possible Class 1 NIC's liability that might arise. For example, where an employee's own private medical insurance premium is paid by the employer instead of being provided with a company medical scheme. It is only appropriate to report the medical benefit at Section I of the P11D if the contract is between the employer and the medical insurance company, as opposed to the reimbursement of the employee's pecuniary liability, which might go into Section B of the P11D as a payment made on behalf of the employee. I have already mentioned the CWG5 booklet. While Appendix 1 Common Benefits provides very useful guidance for employers completing P11Ds, identifying whether there is an NIC's liability, and if so, should it be in Class 1 or Class 1A, and then where the expense payment or benefit in kind should be entered on the form P11D. So have that by your side when you're completing P11Ds. P11D timetable. Next, we need to set up a timetable to collect all the information we need and to allow us enough time to be able to complete and submit the P11Ds both accurately and on time. I've already said the submission deadline is a Monday, the 6th of July 2009, but that's the date that HMRC expect to receive the forms. We should allow sufficient time to be able to give advance copies of the P11D information to the employees and directors. That's so that they can tell us if there are any errors to be corrected before the forms are submitted to HMRC. I don't have a problem with sending amended forms in at a later date, but I think we should try and manage the situation to minimise the number of amendments. I suggest giving employees and directors copies of their P11D information by Friday the 19th of June 2009, if you can't do it earlier. Give them a week to respond with any queries. You can choose to give them a photocopy of the P11D. If you're doing it by computer, by software, you might have specific information that the software provides for employees. You could do it by a company memo. There is no statutory requirement of the format to give information to the employees. So how do you intend to submit the P11Ds? HMRC's P11D guide states that you can complete and submit the returns online using pay-as-you-earn online for employers, the internet, EDI. It also says that you may find it easier and quicker to file online, and its website link is www.hmrc.gov.uk/EBU/pay-as-you-earn_online. You can also complete and print off the forms from the CD-ROM, the fill-in forms on screen section, or of course you can order paper forms P11D via the order line and complete them manually and submit them manually. I have to say that handwriting them and submitting them and photocopying them is hard work. If you do have to do some manual ones, my advice is always to have some spare paper copies for last minute submission. And remember that you can photocopy and submit blank forms. Also remember to keep copy of what you send to HMRC. If you do intend to use a third party software, PLMD software, such as the PKF PLMD software that I use, you need to make sure that you've ordered it and that you've got the latest update version before you start inputting the information. Try also and find some time to test the software, even if you have used it before, because there might have been changes that might throw you into a panic if you're up against the wire doing the forms at the last minute. Next, what information do you need to complete the forms? My advice is always to look back to last year and see what was reported then. This is a very reliable method of avoiding egg on the face by missing something that was previously reported. I would also hope to see a permanent P11D or tax file that will indicate what items have to be reported and what items can be excluded. And if there's any valuation issues for benefits, then that might be on the file telling us what to do, how to do it. So this file should include any items covered by a P11D dispensation or where the liability is settled by the employer via a PAYE settlement agreement. What about P11D dispensations and PAYE settlement agreements? If there is a P11D dispensation, this should be checked to see what information can be excluded from the P11Ds, assuming, of course, that the P11D dispensation is still valid. If there is no P11D dispensation, we ought to consider applying for one. Over recent years, HMRC has been actively encouraging employers to apply for a P11D dispensation to reduce the number of forms to be completed and submitted. This perhaps should encourage us to apply for a dispensation. In terms of the 2008-09 tax year, there is some doubt as to whether HMRC will backdate it to then, but it wouldn't stop me applying. They will normally backdate to the start of a tax year if they're satisfied that the expenses policy and procedures applied throughout that year. But if you think it's too late to apply for 2008-09, don't leave it until this time next year before thinking about applying for a dispensation for the future. If there's a 2008-09 PAYE settlement agreement that has been registered with HMRC, you will need to check what items are to be included in that PSA so that they can be omitted from the P11Ds. Again, there should be a permanent tax or P11D file to record information such as that so that we can identify what we can exclude and what has to be included. Remember that P11Ds can be submitted in list form, and if the only reportable benefit is, say, medical insurance, it might be the simplest route to take. It is important to agree the format of a schedule with HMRC in advance, and they may set limits in terms of the size of the font and the number of entries on a P11D. Sometimes offices insist on one schedule to cover everything, whereas I have seen some offices accepting separate schedules for cars and then other benefits. But you need to check that out with the tax office to avoid them being rejected, especially if it's at the last minute when it's too late to do other formats. There is guidance on list forms and schedules in paragraph 25.6 of the booklet 480. The next item on my agenda is the source of information that I will need to complete the P11Ds, and now is the time to make early contact with those people so that you can reliably obtain that information in good time for completing the P11Ds. You might need to pick up the telephone or send them an email or a fax. Make sure that you give them sufficient time to be able to provide the information that you need. I'm always keen on giving them a copy of the information that they've supplied me with before, because it'll make it easier for them to decide where they get the information from and how to provide it. So who then are we going to have to contact? Depending on the size of the client or your employer company, it may be the payroll bureau. The payroll bureau will so often have a lot of information in terms of payments deducted from salary, if there's a salary sacrifice scheme for something like childcare vouchers, payroll bureau will be the ones to ask. Is it in-house or is it an external payroll bureau? There may be repayments of loans deducted from salary. Again, you'll need that information to complete that section of the P11D. The Human Resources or Personnel Department will need to be asked for details of any new benefits that may have been introduced. And if you're not party to that benefit, you may not be aware of it. Information on such issues as relocations, where HR personnel will be aware of who's been relocated. And we'll need that information in order to determine whether the tax-free limit has been exceeded and anything has to be reported. Of course, the Finance or Accounts Department should be aware of the costs that have been incurred during the 2008-09 tax year, and they might need to provide us with information, particularly in respect of things like expense payments and benefits to be reported. The Finance or Accounts Department will have details of accounts direct with suppliers where there may be information to be reported on the P11Ds if there isn't a dispensation to cover such items as travel, subsistence, business entertaining, etc. What about company cars? If the company cars to go onto a P11D or vans, who has that information? Who knows what cars are available, were available during the year? Is there a fleet manager or a leasing company, or is there even a local garage for a small company that we might have to approach to get details of things like the list prices? And finally, is there anyone else, such as a relocation company, that you need to provide information to you? Well, next, what are the reporting requirements? Employers must report all expenses and benefits provided to employees and directors, or indeed to members of their family or household, if they're by virtue of the employment. That means that we do have to include costs met directly by the employer, such as a supplier's account with a taxi firm, a travel firm, a hotel, a restaurant, in addition to reporting the actual reimbursed expenses that are paid to the employees via their expense or petty cash system or via their credit cards. Next, we remember that P11Ds are required for all directors, but excluding full-time working directors who have no material interest in the company, which means 5% of the ordinary share capital. And we can exclude directors of a charity or other non-profit making organisation, and for any employee or director earning at a rate of £8,500 per annum. That figure is so low, it's been there for many, many years. In the recent pre-budget speculation, it was suggested it should be increased to £25,000, but it wasn't. Now, a director includes any person in accordance with whose instructions the directors are accustomed to act. It doesn't include someone who has the nominal title of director but isn't a company's act director. In calculating the £8,500 limit, you must include all salaries, fees, bonuses, commissions, and all expense payments and benefits before deducting any allowable expenses. And if we had someone, say, starting a company on the 5th of January and just work for 3 months, you would pro rata, if they received £2,000 a month over 3 months and received £6,000, you would pro rata it over the whole year and they would be over the £8,500 limit. I've already mentioned that employers have to provide each employee with a statement of the information shown on the P11D, and the time limit for doing this is the same time limit of the 6th of July 2009. There's a similar reporting requirement for any third-party providers of expense payments or benefit. And again, as I've said, there's no set format for this information, so it could be a copy of the P11D, it could be a company memo. One point to remember, and it's a question that often crops up when I'm doing the P11D course, is what about leavers? An employee that has left the company before the end of the tax year, before the 5th of April, doesn't automatically get a P11D, but they have an entitlement to a P11D. And what would happen is that they could write to the ex-employer and say, I want a copy of the P11D information. My advice to you is when preparing the P11Ds, you have to decide whether it's easier just to do the P11Ds for leavers at the same time and send them out to them. Otherwise, you need to keep the information in case they request it. Next, what I'd like to look at is the reporting exclusions. the entries that don't have to be made on the P11Ds. And the starting point is to remember that we do not have to complete nil P11Ds, so that any employee, or indeed even a director, who has no expense payments or benefits in kind to be included on a P11D, we would not do a nil form. As already explained, items included in a P11D dispensation and a pay-as-you-earn settlement agreement should also be excluded from the P11Ds. We don't want them doubly reported because there's a danger they would be doubly taxed. We also need to tell employees, particularly in respect of PAYE settlement agreements, if there are items that they're not required to report on their tax returns or pay tax on. We could also include within this exclusion bracket any items that might be included in a taxed award scheme. That sort of scheme is often operated by a third party, providing incentives to the employer's employees to sell their products. Chapter 5 of the booklet 480 provides a lot more guidance to us on the items to be excluded from the P11D. We'll start off with office accommodation, supplies or services that are exempt. It will give us guidance on the exempt job-related living accommodation. Payments towards additional household costs of employees who work at home. Payments that are covered by an extra statutory concession. Or payments that are covered by a statutory exemption. And quite a comprehensive coverage of this in Chapter 5 of the booklet 480. Next in the preparation is to bear in mind the basic rules for calculating the benefits, which will be covered in more detail on the second part of the PLMD podcast this year. The basic rule for P11D purposes is that the cash equivalent or value of the expense payment or benefit in kind is the cost to the employer or any other third-party provider. This is based on specific legislation applying to directors and to what we once knew as higher-paid employees. I've already said the £8,500 limit has remained at this level for very many years. And the current consultation includes actually abandoning the idea of completing P11Ds at all and putting them through the payroll. Now, there are some exceptions to the basic rules, which, based on special legislation, we have living accommodation, vouchers, car and fuel benefit charges, and company vans, where all employees are taxed on the basis of specific valuation rules as opposed to the cost rule. We have to include details of any amount made good by the employee from which income tax was deducted under pay-as-you-earn. We shouldn't really be netting off the amounts made good and showing the net benefit. The requirement on the PLMD generally is to show the gross cost, less the amount made good, and then the net cash equivalent, which is the amount that should be taxed and liable to Class 1A NIC. You will need to make a corresponding adjustment to the total benefits reported on the form P11DB if you enter an amount from which tax has been deducted under pay-as-you-earn, where the benefit is liable to Class 1A NICs. Making good is an issue that's quite important. It'll be mentioned again in the other podcast, but the timescale for making good should be reasonably short, and at least by the time that the P11Ds are submitted. This was reinforced a couple of years ago by the impact filing case where two directors tried to make good the cost of private fuel. The revenue refused to allow this and the courts agreed with the revenue that it was too late. Anyway, that's all for now in this part of the PLMD podcast. At the second PLMD podcast, we'll look in much more detail at the actual calculation of the expenses and benefits and the reporting. So thank you for that.